Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Big Interview Q&A show for May. This is part two. I'm Martin Gregg, and with me today are Graeme Hunter, host of The Big Interview, and our guest for these shows, La Liga TV's Pete Jensen. We have questions, as always, from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/Graeme Hunter and from our wonderful sponsors at Bet365. First up is socio Lee Allen. The fallout of the ESL was pretty seismic, but the penalties given out for the nine clubs seemed a bit tame. Is this because UEFA feel those clubs had learnt their lesson by pulling out so quickly, and because they are more focused on the bigger fish, Madrid, Barca and Juve, who seem determined to cling on to the doomed wreckage? What are your thoughts?
Can I go back to what Lee asked there? Because he said, you know, light penalties. Now, both you and Pete know that I think what we saw was rodent behaviour. I mean, just disgusting. Feral, greedy, ignorant, bloated, half-wittery. But the penalties, Lee, these clubs mounted a challenge to UEFA in the Champions League, but the speed with which they hauled up the white flag, all but three of them, means that I think that if Šeferin, the head of UEFA, had punished them for their statement and their actions, which at no stage, in my opinion, damaged the current Champions League. If he didn't find a negotiated settlement with them, it would have hardened the position of the, I'm not going to call it European Super League, EHL, European Halfwit League. There we go. Now, politically, if Šeferin doesn't make some conciliatory moves, he ensures that they all go, ah, right, this is how it is, we're out of here. I mean, although I've lived a long life, there are very few occasions I've ever seen anything like it. I have a dilemma in that, you know, I hated the Brexit fever. I despise Brexit. And there was a bit of a Brexit fever outside Chelsea that night. It was a bit of like, I mean, the one sign doesn't, you know, encapsulate everybody's feelings, but we want our wet Wednesday nights at, or wet Tuesday nights at Stoke was one of the banners. But, you know, there was a jingoistic fever about you foreign owners can't touch our English game. And we needed that, you know. I was so excited by what I saw. I was so delighted by what I saw. You're right, the speed of the collapse spoke a lot about how many of the club's owners or presidents had been bewitched by Florentino Perez, who is the evil little Rumpelstiltskin behind all of this. He wanted to, for my taste, Lee, he wanted to have the money quickly to sign Haaland and Mbappe if he could. And a few Joshes and Charlies stamping up and down the Fulham Road, waving placards at Chelsea, robbed him of that. I think it's absolutely magical. But Šeferin, in my opinion, has played this part of it correctly in that welcoming back those that wanted to wilt quickly meant that the collapse was almost total. And currently threatening to... No, I am sorry, Lee. By the time you listen to this, maybe it'll become concrete. But all we've seen is rumours that he wants to expel those who have clung on to the wreckage, Barcelona, Juventus and Madrid, from the Champions League for at least two seasons. And in that instance, I think he's right. I have no question whatsoever that as of the minute the Champions League final finishes, if those three clubs still say that they're forming a Super League, then they have to be red carded. Where I would agree with you, Lee, but it's not the way I heard the question, is that any fan of any club up and down the English leagues who's had their points deducted or league position adjusted because of some sort of transgression of the rules, who are now looking at the English Premier League clubs who've got away scot-free from saying to the Premier League, we don't need your permission, we're forming a special European league, we don't care if it impacts on you or if it impacts on other clubs, we're not looking for your permission. In the Premier League's case, I think it now looks like that they've got away scot-free. And I think smaller clubs and fans of smaller clubs should be irate. And I think the Premier League have mishandled that. Whether that's true of La Liga, I think consistently it probably has to be said that that's true, because two of the clubs that refuse to let go of it are in La Liga. And I saw yesterday the head of the Italian FA saying that if Juventus don't immediately renounce the Super League, they'll be kicked out of Serie A. So I personally think that in domestic terms, the clubs who wilted have got away scot-free, and I'm not certain that's... I'm not convinced in my own mind that that's rightly. In European terms, I would expect that the three remaining dullards are told by Schifrin, once this European season is finished, you won't be allowed to participate in the Champions League, and I think that would be justice.
There's that little window, isn't there? When you buy something online, you get about half an hour, don't you? If you've pressed the wrong button, you can sort of... you know, annul the purchase, and I think that's pretty much what the English clubs did. Oh no, we didn't mean to press it. Yeah. And in as much as they embarrass themselves by having to, you know, come out and say, oh, we didn't mean to do that, we didn't realise the supporters weren't going to be happy about this, then that, in a sense, is punishment in itself. And in terms of what Schifrin does with the three clubs who are clinging on to this fantasy, that what football needs is an alternative to the Champions League, he needs to be careful, I suppose, not to play into the narrative of that Madrid are encouraging, that UEFA are a mafia and that, you know, they tell everyone what to do and aren't they awful. And the way out of that may just be that, you know, to be in next season's Champions League, you need to sign... whatever it's going to be, to say that, you know, you'll absolutely under no circumstances walk away from the competition, and if Madrid have to sign that, and Juventus and Barca too, and that it's made very public that they have signed that, that will also be them having their, you know, pants taken down again. It was horrible, wasn't it? I mean, it was the equivalent of, you know, the rich old guys kind of banging their silver tip canes into the ground and saying, you know, we want more money. We want more customers, we want more goals. Can we not make the goals bigger? Can we not make the game shorter? We've got people in, you know, Timbuktu saying they don't like 0-0 draws, it's not good enough. I was surprised at the time and disappointed that there were so many people, they were a minority, but there were people who I thought would see through what it was. It was just a power grab and a money grab, and actually said, well, things do need to sort of change. And, you know, UEFA is an independent body running football, and it needs to be an independent body running football. And whatever criticism you might have of UEFA, does it take too much money out of the game? Is it sometimes over-influenced by this club or that club? It ultimately is an independent body running football, and it cannot be replaced by the 12 owners, presidents, chairmen of the 12 richest clubs. Florentino Perez cannot be allowed to be the boss of the new Champions League. Of course it can't happen. It's a basic kind of sort of... separation of powers issue before you get on to anything else. So I was so pleased that it was kicked into touch so quickly, and English football fans did the kicking into touch, and they've got their tails between their legs. Do they need to be beaten over the head as well with further fines and further bans? As I say, I just think Schifrin needs to be careful not to play into Florentino's narrative that UEFA are a nasty mafia.
Given what we saw about their, you know, the logo they designed, the stationery, the corporate ID, the information that they were able to give out, the lack of a launch, the way in which they went off, it's literally proof about, you know, piss up in a brewery. This would have been a European half-wit league where somebody would have, their referees. Who's supposed to do that then? Footballs? No, I didn't bring foot. Are your shorts are too tight? You wouldn't have trusted them, honestly, to run a piss up in a brewery. And the concept that on top of everything else, and most of which Pete's detailed there, the idea that this lot could have actually won. We go to these games and you know, the officials that make it happen will grate on your nerves, the rules, the accreditations, the protocols that we've needed to run this game during the only global pandemic. There's been pandemics that have ripped Africa apart, but the only global pandemic of our lifetimes, and the people that run football have kept soccer going. You know, if that lot had been in charge, we wouldn't have had football for 18 months. And when it started again, players and officials and fans had been dropping with COVID. The whole thing was the sickest, most pathetic joke that you could possibly have imagined in modern football. And well, people made a lot of the fact they didn't ask the fans or they didn't ask the footballers. They cheated the very people who'd have had to deliver this league as, it doesn't matter, we'll just offer them a lot more money and they'll all be fine. Well, I think they had another shot coming there as well.
Before we go to the break, I do want to squeeze in a question on Valencia from Shane Hurley. Shane says, hello, Graeme and Pete, what do you think will happen in the off-season and beyond with Valencia? What's the latest from the Lim family's plans, brackets, if there is one, and has there been any real fan mobilisation that could enact change there? And he says, many thanks for all the wonderful content.
Well, there was a massive demonstration, wasn't there, on Saturday, 4,000 Valencia fans outside of Mestalla. They're obviously going to need to bring in a new manager. Diego Martinez, I think, is the obvious choice. Can you persuade him to... Well, I think he's decided that he wants to leave Granada. I think he feels that he's done everything he can do there. Can you persuade him to take a gamble? Because it's become a gamble. It's always been a gamble to manage Valencia in the best of times, but even more so now in terms of what it does to your career. They showed at the weekend that they've got some fabulous young players, despite the fact that they've sold so many, and this is an important point, because Peter Lim, I mean, he might not be a great at running a football club, but you assume he knows how to make money. And when you see Ferran Torres leaving the club for relative peanuts before he ever really lets the Valencia fans enjoy what he can do on the football pitch, you wonder about the commercial brain as well. But they have got good young players coming through. Thierry Correa was very good at the weekend. They've got Guillemon, they've got Carlos Soler, who's a fantastic central midfield player. Geddish, they've got Yunus Musa, who's had his first season, 18 I think he is, and he's been tremendous as well. So there are still tools to use. And if they are able to bring in a good manager, and Diego Martinez is a top young manager, then, you know, there's hope going into next season. But what's not going to change is the fact that the people at the club, the supporters of the club, do not want him there. He has got a point when he says that, the previous lot were from Valencia and they're the ones that got you into this mess in the first place. But it's still sad what's happened to the club, and you can fully understand why they're not happy with the current owners.
Morning, Shane. Oh, you know, it's obvious that there needs to be... That there will be changes, in that Peter Lim has been right from the start completely clear about the fact that he wants to cancel out the amount of money that he, via his company Meriton, has got invested in Valencia. He's put it in the books. I want my money back. I also think it's completely legitimate that if you invest in a club which was going to the wall, you know, let's be absolutely crystal clear about that, it was going to the wall. And had he not been in charge during these times when the local banks in Valencia couldn't have supported Valencia during this shutdown, when the club hasn't been able to earn any money, then it would have gone to the wall. So I think that whatever discussion we have about Anil Murti and about Peter Lim and Meriton in general needs to be in the context of there is still a... Los Che still exist. The disgusting thing that he did was chop Marcelino's legs off at the knee at the height of his powers, when all Marcelino was asking was to decorate the squad with two or three quality footballers that would have added to the wage bill, which has gone up much against Peter Lim's wishes, and would have needed clever trading in the transfer market, either big money or good swaps or sales from the squad that Marcelino approved of, in order to do some sort of pound for pound betterment. And what the principal thing that caused the rift between Lim and Marcelino, or no, that caused Lim to sack him, was that Marcelino was saying, I want better players so that we can win trophies, so that we can become the third force, the fourth force in this country. Do effectively what Sevilla have been doing, Shane. And what Lim heard there, above and beyond an augmentation of the wage bill, which he'd have had to partially fund, was the idea that the people Pete's talking about there, let's say particularly Guillamon, Kang and Lee, Eunice, wouldn't come through. Because, again, let's be completely clear about this. Lim wants those guys to come through so that they can be plumped up to be sold as turkeys at Christmas. He wants, it's not a long-term academy rules, we play better football, we'll have an identity. It's play the youngsters so that I can sell them, not like Ferran Torres, but in time to earn big fees. And that's how he sees taking his money back. Again, this has been made public in their accounts for, well, now nearly 7-8 years, by my memory. So I would say this, Shane, that was the point at which, as cup holders with a vibrant side that wholly believed in the coach, whereby Lim made a mistake, because repeat qualification for the Champions League would have allowed him to take his money. He's chosen. I would make a connection between him and the way that Peter Lowell has run Celtic. You know, brilliant scouting by Celtic over the last 10, 11, 12 years, where players have come in and they've just been looked at as to be plumped up and sold for big money. Whereas Celtic, like Valencia, if you get into the group stages of the Champions League and you start to do well, the amount of money that you take in supersedes transfer sales. Point, full stop. So now they're in a situation whereby there are going to be sales, wage bill will be cut, players will be used to bring in big sums. And I passionately hope Diego Martinez has got more sense than to go there. It's the wrong move for him. He'll be next in after Lopetegui at Seville. That might take 2-3 years. Might. And I just adamantly hope that he doesn't put himself at them, because you're putting yourself into a maelstrom that, however talented you are, you can't control. Xavi Gracia is a great coach. Marcelino's a great coach. Where are they now? Diego, don't go there, is the message. Sorry, Shane, I'm being a bit negative, but I think that there are really, really troubled, really stormy times ahead for Valencia, and I worry about them. And when the fans are allowed back into that stadium, just get your knitting out and sit by the guillotine, because that's what's going to happen.
Okay, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a moment with a couple more questions to complete part two of this month's Q&A.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back with a question from Socio Tom Lee.
Hola, Graham and Pete. Socio Tom Lee here with one for May's question and answer, please. What's going on at Malaga? What a mess. I think it was 2013 they made the last eight of the Champions League in a team that had some absolutely brilliant players. Ruud van Nistelrooy up front, banging him in, etc. Brilliant part of the world, great ground. They've even got quite a cool strip, but the lights have gone out. I think, if memory serves me right, they were discarded like an unwanted Christmas present by their owner. And there they are halfway down the Segunda, getting spanked by teams that not very long ago they would have sent away like errant schoolboys. What is the story at La Rosaleda, please, gentlemen?
Yeah, I mean, they are halfway down the second division, but they could easily be halfway down the third division. We've seen big clubs. Everything Tom says about Malaga is right. It's a brilliant place, and it's a great club and a great strip as well. But things could be a lot worse. And I think there are signs this season that they're kind of getting things back together. Al Thani is slowly but surely, a distant memory. Manolo Gaspar is the sporting director. I think he's signed a deal for a couple more years. It seems the decision to bring in Sergio Paiza as the coach was the right one, because he knew the young players coming through. They're basing themselves on the young players. I've not seen a great deal of them this season, but I've spoken to people who have seen them, and they say that the players like Luis Munoz, who's versatile defensive player, been likened to Llorente, A, because he covers so much of the pitch, and B, because he's come through as a defensive player, and they think that he's going to his projection is playing higher up the pitch, playing further forward. They've still got a big name, so players still were happy to go there on loan. I think they've got Juan Soriano, who's on loan from Sevilla, the goalkeeper. So you can still sit down with fairly decent level of player and say, come here, and they may be in the middle of the second division, but it's Malaga. Malaga is Malaga, so players still are happy to go there on loan. They've got a goal scoring problem this season, which they need to sort out. They've not been particularly lucky. I think Pablo Chavarria was maybe the man they were pinning their hopes on to solve the goal scoring problems, and he got serious injuries out for the season. Then you've got the restrictions on who they can bring in because of the wage restrictions that they're under from La Liga. Brought in Sepovic for very little money. He's only got one goal so far, and I think at the weekend that game against Mallorca, they had a winger playing at centre forward, Kai Quintana. So it's make do, and it's patching things up, and it's trying to bring through the young players, and it's trying to attract loan signings that are decent. I just think it could be a lot worse. It could be a whole lot worse. I know all about having someone come in and destroy the club. Because he's got his eye on maybe a couple of land deals he can do a little bit further down the line, and when they don't come off, he wants to bail. So I feel for Malaga, but I think all things considered, their fate could have been far worse, and I think they'll be back contending for a place in the top division, if not next season, the season after.
I think with a little tilt, the speech done with his kaleidoscope, and isn't he adept with that kaleidoscope? I think they're a little hero story right now, because it's as recently as summer last year that Al Thani the club was laying off all its staff, that they were effectively without a penny to scratch together. They were unable to field a full professional squad for games. The fact that they are currently winning back the hearts and minds of the local support, and they are, the fact that Al Thani has now got very little to do with the club, although I think there's still a debt from him to the club. The fact that they're where they are in Division 2 is I think a literal miracle. And it means that once stripped of that greedy fraud who began his blot his copybook long before what you talk about, when a Scottish referee's incompetence eliminated them in Dortmund, when they should have gone through, they deserved to go through. And their team was just so good to watch, with Juan Cruz and Van Nistelrooy and Joaquin and Isco, and I forget, was it Tulalan in the midfield? And it was just a joy to watch them. I used to go down and cover them a lot. Pete was there down to see old Quincy when he was a promising player. But right now, Tom, I honestly believe that the sheer naked football health of the club in total adversity, given where they were last summer, when effectively, without being officially declared bankrupt as a club, they didn't have, they were almost, for a little while, they were competing as an amateur club. And that situation is changing. They're going to definitely stay up. Now, it's a huge question about how well they trade. How do they improve? Realistically, I don't imagine that the demand to go up or be in the playoffs next season is something that honestly should even be their priority. If they could manage it, it'd be a happy miracle. And we'd all love to see Malaga back in the top division for sure. But keeping the club alive, keeping it healthy as it is right now, keeping it competitive, if they can do that and find a way to build some degree of financial robustness, then I, for one, will be thrilled. And it's been disgusting to watch what happened to it. But, Tom, we nearly lost them. We nearly lost them altogether. For a club that, has gone financially bankrupt before and had to change its name and, you know, it's the very first football stadium I ever watched a match in Spain back in 1982. My affection for it is high, and it's a fantastic city. But I think they've gone from being bloated, sort of blundering muppets to a little bit of a hero story. I think they're the heroic underdogs right now.
Okay, next up is socio Peter Gordon, who says, "Hi, Graham and Pete. 2 seasons ago, the EPL contributed all 4 finalists in the European competitions, and this season, they have 3 out of the 4. Barca and Real are pleading poverty and have ageing squads. Has the La Liga bubble finally burst?"
Pedro, we don't know each other, but let's be completely clear about our vocabulary. You're welcome on this podcast and this Q&A. Bubble? Listen, since 2000 in the Champions League, there has been 10 Spanish winners. After that, it's 4 from England, 3 from Italy, 3 from Germany. 10 Spanish winners since 2000 in the Champions League. Shall we dance over at the Europa League, Pedro? 10 Spanish winners since 2000 in the Europa League. The nearest is England with 4. Let's go to international football bubble. As far as the under-21 championship is concerned, since 1998, 4 wins for Spain, 2 for Germany, 2 for Italy, and a couple for, I don't know who, somebody else. Don't really care, Pedro. Let's go to the under-19s. Since the tournament was formed, Pedro, on 8 wins for Spain in the under-19s, the European under-19 championship. I can't pronounce it, FRA, seems to be spelt France. They've won 3 times. And only has the bubble burst in the European under-17 championship, where since the thing was formed, Spain are second with 3 wins behind the Netherlands, who won the last 2. So prior to the last 2 tournaments, Spain were in the lead as that bubble. All I'm saying there in the kindest fashion, Pedro, is define bubble.
Also, Peter, I mean, even if your bubble burst theory was right, I mean, you're not going to get a couple of fairy liquid board directors to go along with it, are you? So, you know, me and Graham are not going to...
Oh, OK, hold on a second, Pedro, and up in Montaner. Let's just cool the beans a little bit. As we speak, the holders of the Europa League is Seville. As we speak, Villarreal are going to the final. In this dreadful season of crisis in Spanish football, Real Madrid were semi-finalists in the Champions League. Spain go to the European Champions, having pumped Germany 6-0 in the worst defeat in German football international history. And Toni Kroos saying, "I've only ever played in 1 game in my entire life when I literally felt helpless and there was nothing I could do about it." Pedros of the world, just take a chill pill. Now, if there are things to talk about in a grown-up manner about the debt and the... There's a brain drain, Pedros. I think that if you look and see wee Pablo Garcia playing second division football for Lecce, and he's an absolute diamond of a footballer. If you watch Samuel Castillejo not getting a game at Milan, and if we look, who's the lovely, I've always got a problem with his name, lovely ex-Betis left-footed midfielder who's a Spain international who plays at Naples right now. Fabian Ruiz, Olmo at flipping Leipzig, you know, Ferran Torres at Manchester City. I'd argue we can go on and on and on. There's been a brain drain. There's been a degree to which the fairly rocky finances of the non-Premier League teat-suckling clubs in Spain have either been ill-prepared to defend their junior talents, or the junior talents have found that it's financially attractive, or they'll play more quickly, which is a horrible phrase, in other parts of the world, like Eric Garcia must have thought when he went to Manchester City. There, Pedro, there is a problem in the way that Spanish football has been overfished, asset stripped. I think there has been a problem with that, and I think it's going to continue. I think it's hard now for clubs to, for example, there are clubs absolutely lining up to try and take Pau Torres. There's one who I won't name who think that, certainly when they spoke to me about it, and they said they were far further down the line than Real Madrid about Pau Torres. Now, I can't believe that if Real Madrid want this kid, that A, Villarreal will be able to defend the position, but at least he stays in the Liga. But there is one English club that thinks that he's the right man and that they're going to get him. And Pau Torres is, I don't know, what, 22? You know, he's this is really his absolute breakthrough season. And there's so much more he should be offering La Liga until minimum 26, 27 and lifting trophies and dominating with the international side. But already he's under threat. And you could mimic that position right across La Liga, never mind at Villarreal. So there is a problem. And Peter, I also believe that this dates back to, you know, my guru and Xavi said that. Xavi, after the whipping they got at the hands of Bayern Munich, that put a magnifying glass on it back there, which I don't know, was it 20? No, it was Tito Villanova. So let's say 20, yeah, I'm going to go for 2012-13 is when that whipping came. And they conceded, what, 7 times 4 in Munich and 3 at the Camp Nou. Xavi said, listen, the Spanish school of playing is such that if we are not, you know, fully on form, and we want to play the ball, and we are slimmer and smaller, and other teams are talented, but they're faster and they're bigger and they're on better form and they're fitter, we'll lose. He said all the time, and he said this at a time when Barcelona were on the point of winning another treble. He said it off the back of Spain having dominated international football. He pointed out that the Spanish school of football, which doesn't apply to Atleti or Sevilla, but across the board in terms of the Spanish footballers who are developed, it is the case that they play a brand of football whereby if they're exhausted, they don't have the resources to do what the athletes can do. And there is, without being derogatory about Chelsea or even about Bayern Munich, there was a reason that they looked so dominant over the last, you know, 24 months. And particularly Chelsea. Chelsea remain not that special a side in terms of individual quality. There is quality, but their number one attribute is that they're supremely drilled and supremely athletic. They remind me a little bit of the, you know, original Atleti under Cholo Simeone in terms of how well drilled they are, how willing they are to do everything every time. That's great, and good luck to them if they win, or if you know, if Bayern Munich continue another 9 Bundesligas. But all we're watching right now, Pedro, is at a time when Spanish football has been a little bit asset stripped in terms of its league clubs and younger players have been taken away, we're just seeing Spanish sides not having upgraded yet to either having just outright great footballers brought up through their own canteras who are at that ramming speed age of 26, 27. And we might not get that for a little while because some of them are going to be fished away when they're 19 or 20 or 21, unfortunately. So it's a collision of circumstances. But the thing that built what you called the bubble, about the brilliance of coaching, the brilliant technique, the brilliant ability to strategize on the pitch, because we're talking about footballers of really clever minds, that isn't going away. It isn't changing. It's just not under threat at all. What's under threat is how well La Liga's clubs can afford to buy the great players around the world who are now being sourced more quickly by some of the cleverer European clubs, and how well La Liga's clubs that are now straddled with brutal debt are able to fight against the nation-state clubs who are going to say, yeah, we'll take your kid at 19 and we'll keep him for a couple of years until we see whether we've got him, he's got it or not.
Agree with all of that. First things first. I think both Barca and Madrid managed badly their in Madrid's case, the post Ronaldo years. You know, they put all their chips on Hazard and it hasn't worked out. They put a lot of confidence in a group of young players and were then able to develop them within the club. Brahim's doing really well at Milan. Let's see what he does when he comes back. Kubo's had a nightmare season. Vinicius and Rodrigo standing still. Odegaard at Arsenal. Those five, you know, were going to be, you know, Real Madrid's immediate future. And it hasn't worked out that way. It may turn out that the Real Madrid's future is actually a generation back. The ones that we're seeing come through now. Antonio Blanco's looked superb. Miguel Gutierrez has looked fantastic. Chus looks a player. Sergio Rivas. So I think Madrid will come strong again with those young players. I still somehow think, although I'm not sure how they're going to do it, but I still somehow think they're going to end up with Mbappe because I think Mbappe wants to play there. So they'll be back. Barca will be back. Barca's kids have been brilliant and are a step on from the Madrid players I've just mentioned. Pedri, 50 games in his first season as an 18-year-old. He's off the scale. Ronald Araujo is going to be sensational. He's going to be sensational in terms of the way that Barcelona want to play as well, defending on the halfway line and having the ability to cover so much ground. Ninguez has been excellent as well. Let's hope and pray that Ansu Fati comes back from what is it now, his fifth operation. Poor lad, he's had a terrible, terrible season. But let's hope at the start of next season he's on the pitch right from the go. So they'll both be back. And Sevilla and Atleti will be there next season. Atleti trying to grind out 0-0 in the first leg with six across the back with Simeone there. We already covered that. But it has been a fall in a way, but it's temporary and it's cyclical. But the European Cup final this year will be played out between two teams who have a bottomless pit of money behind them. And Madrid and Barca have never had that. In the past, they've had a huge unfair advantage in terms of who gets the domestic TV rights. That's been put right by La Liga, and that's made La Liga far better and far more exciting. And it's no coincidence that that's why right now we've got the most exciting title race since, I think, something like 1948. But as a consequence of that, you make your biggest teams slightly less powerful in Europe. And we're seeing that in the Champions League. But it's a blip, and I think there'll be a Spanish club in the final once again, if not next season, the season after.
So it's also been played out between two sides who've dipped into, you know, where Azpilicueta is the captain of one side and Ferran Torres and Rodri are interesting, important footballers at City. I may have missed a couple. Brahim was there. And even though there isn't a splurge of Spanish colours right across the two squads, it is the case that, you know, none of those players are playing in La Liga. More like them will be tempted away. There's absolutely no question about that whatsoever in my mind. And, you know, I suppose you could apply that to Kun Aguero when he was taken away. He was taken away from Atleti, and Atleti were, you know, they welcomed the fee. But it's the case at the moment that a lot of Spain's clubs aren't going to be able to defend themselves from, you know, the multi-billionaire owned clubs who come in and say, we like the look of you, it's not necessarily going to be the first team kid, but you'll be part of our development, and maybe in a couple of seasons you'll be lifting the European Cup, and for an extra £200,000 a week, most kids will say yeah.
And as you say, Graham, that is mostly financial. But there's one outlier there that you mentioned, Azpilicueta. Azpilicueta could have been bought. I mean, Barcelona should have bought Cesar Azpilicueta about three seasons ago. And he's just a player who... Barcelona and Madrid in particular are guilty of missing what's right under their nose and trying to go to the other side of the world to find it. Azpilicueta's probably been, and you're the best person to ask this to, Graham, if you can think of someone better... He's probably been the best Spanish defensive export in the history of their game, and it's so great that he's going to be. He goes into the Champions League final with a chance to lift in the trophy. He's been brilliant again this season, but strangely overlooked by Barcelona, by Real Madrid, and by the national team as well, because he doesn't play for Barcelona or Real Madrid.
Well, courtesy of UEFA, I'm interviewing him this afternoon, so I shall pass that on.
That's a brilliantly comprehensive answer. And just on the subject of Champions League final, we'll finish with a question from our sponsors at Bet365, who ask, who will be man of the match in the Champions League final? And I just want to preface this by saying we are planning to do a Champions League Q&A and get into this in a little bit more detail. So let's just use this as a nice teaser for that show. So maybe, Graham and Pete, if you could both pick a potential man of the match for this year's Champions League final, wherever it will be played.
You'd be tempted, given how vital City's midfield is, however you define the midfield, whether you define it as the way in which they control the game or the way in which currently they have runners arriving, like they call it in Spanish football, with Llegada in and around the opponent's box and scoring. That should mean that if Chelsea win, there should be a fair argument that Kante, who's been extraordinary, and I know has been one of those guys who's been extremely worried about the pandemic. He's found himself very affected by it. It's been playing on his mind. He's been ultra, ultra careful about things. And in recent games, he's been stunning. But I'm going to take a little punt. Over the two games against Real Madrid, Christian Pulisic, who didn't start the second one, made the difference. Chelsea pummeled them and were very, very good in a number of different areas, including Mondi. But from, if Chelsea win it, it's my interpretation that it'll be between Mondi and Pulisic. And if they win it, I'm going to go Pulisic. And for City, I don't think there's any doubts, or I don't have any doubts, that as outstandingly brilliant as Kevin De Bruyne is, and it'll be him against his ex-club, I think the guy who's wriggled clear of the kind of marking schemes that Chelsea will put up, and although I think Gundogan is slightly feeling the impact of a huge season, I think that it's Gundogan for City and Pulisic for Chelsea.
Just as I have sympathy for people who have not been paying attention to La Liga for the last 15 years and have therefore not seen enough Messi games and have only seen him in the Champions League, every time I watch Kevin De Bruyne, I have similar feelings about having maybe not taken in as many Premier League games as I would have liked to. He's just an absolute joy to watch. As Graham points out, he's up against his former club, European Cup final. He's never talked about when we talk about the podium, when we talk about, you know, the best three players in the world. But I think this could be his night. And, you know, they came so close, didn't they, in the summer to bringing in Lionel Messi. What would that have meant for KDB? I don't know. He would have had to play second fiddle, as everyone does, to the great man. But they didn't get Messi. It's all about De Bruyne, and I think it'll be De Bruyne's final.
Okay, that's it for the second part of this month's Q&A. Thanks to all our socios who sent in questions for this month's show. Graham Hunter and Pete Jensen, thank you for your time, and thanks to you for listening. We'll be back with one more big interview before the end of the season. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.